Radio Influence. The future is now.
Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crochelle. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crochelle. We're your weekly source for performance information. Hey, listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. Send us your email there. You can also join us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. And if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, and we've been doing this and we'll have a few more shows over the course of the spring here based on our listener feedback, but if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment of the show or maybe an entire episode to your idea, but we will certainly answer your emails, that's for sure, especially if we can help you out in any way, shape, or form. Today we are talking baseball, everyone, and I'm pretty excited about this because baseball is back, baby. For me, a really exciting time of year. You know, we've watched all offseason, the ebb and flow of this offseason, which has been incredibly unique unto itself based on some of the rule changes that have been under discussion. Also, we can't ignore the free agency market that has just really, really sort of signified, I think, a trend in the game of baseball. Now, whether it's coming from the team side or whether it's coming from the player agent side, that's a discussion that maybe we'll leave for another day. But there certainly are changes in the game of baseball. Revenues are at an all-time high. Let's get that straight for sure. So it's not about the money. That's not the issue here. Though, it could be maybe a calibration step this year as the game moves forward. Because if the predictions are correct, the 2018-2019 free agent market might be one of the most lucrative free agent markets in history, and we may very well see some of the richest contracts in all of sport history. So I wonder if what we're seeing this offseason with the free agent market, and there's still, as games are underway, minor league camps start up, there's still a huge number of very, very good free agents that haven't signed with teams. And, you know, we can look at this from a bunch of different angles. Is the talent pool actually getting to a point where teams are happy developing from within, maybe cutting back a little bit on their top-end spending? Maybe it's the fear of these long-term contracts. I mean, we've seen some major issues. Take Pujols, for example. I mean, he had a negative 1.8 WAR last year, and he still owed $114 million on his contract through 2021. That's a scary proposition for anybody who's trying to run a team, balance a payroll, meet the luxury sort of tax limit, but also field a competitive team. Could we be at the age where the long-term contracts are restructured? Well, you could say that for sure, especially if you look at some of the contracts that have gone down this year already. I mean, if you look at Yu Darvish, six-year contract, $126 million. Eric Hosmer, J.D. Martinez had a five-year contract with the Red Sox. An opt-out after the fifth, very front-end loaded. So was Hosmer's. Okay, it's a six-year, $144 million with the Padres, with opt-outs after the second and third year, player opt-outs. So, I mean, the contract structures are a little bit different than we've seen in the past, front-end loaded, perhaps to make it easier to move players down the road. I mean, it bodes well for the player, also bodes well with the team, especially if the plan doesn't come together, because there's so much involved here. But either way, this has been a remarkable year this offseason. In fact, if we just look at the numbers, let's just go by the numbers. We know baseball's all about the numbers, but the numbers really do tell an interesting tale, and especially this offseason. Free agent spending this year, you know, based on the numbers that we were able to find, is right around $925 million with the new contracts, maybe just upwards of $1 billion. Last year, it was 1.46 prior to spring training. 2 years ago, free agency spending was $2.53 billion. So we are way, way behind the mark, even if we look a couple years ago. And again, could it be just a restructuring? I mean, we hear crazy words being thrown out, words that you never want to hear in the game of baseball. Boycott spring training. Rumors, you know, before spring training started, the players were going to boycott. We heard agents crying collusion, and that's been all over the news. These are words you don't want right now in the game of baseball. It's so healthy, ladies and gentlemen. I love the game, and it's so healthy. We need to work through this. You know, the MLB and the Players Association really have got to get to work to make sure the system is in place. The system that will work for both sides to keep the game healthy and growing, because there's just so much good that comes out of the game for sure. Or could it be simply teams trying to recalibrate and prepare for the future? Now, there's two conversations to have here. One is the way that the CBA is now designed in terms of player spending on free agency, certainly the draft, international signings, the waiver wire, Rule 5 drafts. There's huge incentive, much like hockey now, I believe, to not do well. You get major advantages for tanking. If you're at the bottom of the totem pole in terms of team performance at the end of the year, you get some really, really big advantages in terms of spending, picks, positioning, and I think it's actually working against the players in a lot of ways. I think that needs to be looked at and discussed. And then on the other side, something else that needs to be considered is the 2018-2019 free agent market, as we mentioned earlier. This could rock the sporting world. If you look at the names that could hit the market here in 2018-2019, oh boy, things are going to get interesting. Now, we all know a lot of things have to fall into place, the stars have to align, but based on what we know right now, if guys like Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Clayton Kershaw, Josh Donaldson, Charlie Blackmon, and a number of others hit the free agent market next offseason, things are going to get interesting. We may see some of the richest contracts in sport history, and this may have something to do with the team's spending habits this year. Could teams be preparing for the next free agent market? Could this little dip in spending be sort of a precursor to one of the richest free agent markets in the history of the game, maybe the history of sport? It could very well be. I mean, look what the Los Angeles Dodgers are doing. They're cutting payroll to get down below that spending cap, that spending threshold at the top where they don't have to pay the big taxes. So are the Yankees. And if you look at the Marlins are really strategically rebuilding from within. We'll see what they're up to, but I think what they're doing is they're trying to clear the table to build for the future. They're going to bolster that minor league system, and Jeter's pretty smart. He's got a good group there. I don't think it's as malicious as everybody thinks. I think they're just resetting. They're resetting in Miami. They'll be interesting to watch, especially next year when the market comes to bear. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, their true colors will shine, and we'll watch with interest. But that being said, if we look at the highest paid players in the game right now and the rumors and projections that next year's free agent market could blow past contracts out of the water, I mean, that's incredible to me. The highest paid player in baseball, and rightfully so, one of my favorite players of all time is Mike Trout. Mike Trout is going to earn $34 million this year. Clayton Kershaw is close behind at $33.2 million. Greinke gets $31.9 million. Cabrera gets $30 million. Price is getting $30 million. And it goes on and on and on. There are a good number of huge contracts on the table right now, so we watch with interest. And should we be concerned right now about what's happening with this free agent market? Listen, there's a 31st spring training down in Florida for the first time, well, that I can remember in my time on this planet. So maybe the game is changing. I mean, maybe it's time to sort of recalibrate, and maybe it works out to be better. Things usually do, especially when things are, in general, good. Maybe the game needs to recalibrate just a little bit to get to great. I don't know what that looks like, but it certainly is worthy of a good conversation, a deep look and a good hard conversation. That would be interesting as all get up, because it's not simple. Things like this are never simple. I think, you know, you can have a simple approach to it, but there are a lot of factors involved when it comes to settling this. I just hope they can figure it out. But when we talk about the game in general, it's healthy. Revenues are up. I mean, they're knocking on the door $12 billion. We still haven't seen the final numbers. We know it's more than $10 billion in revenue last year in Major League Baseball. We've seen indications of 11 plus. Can we get to 12? Do I hear $12 billion? Well, I think that's a very tangible number for the owners and the players for sure. How that gets split up might be the big conversation. But the game is healthy. Look what happened last year. There are so many great things that happened last year in terms of performance. Big market teams, small market teams, teams coming out of nowhere. The Brewers. The Brewers, by the way, are set this year to make a run at it. They have finally, for the first time, I believe, in franchise history, seriously spent some money. Check it out. And keep your eyes on the Brewers. In fact, if you go back to last year at the All-Star break, they were the lowest payroll team in Major League Baseball, and they were leading their division at the All-Star break last year by 5 games. Now, they fell back. I think at the end of the season, they were 5 or 6 games back, but they were the biggest bang for the buck, the best return on investment in Major League Baseball last year, without a doubt. And there are so many other great stories from last year. I mean, you look at the 22 consecutive games won by the Cleveland Indians. That's an American League record. And the game is not built to win 22 consecutive games. They almost had 23. If they would have cracked that 23, I should look and find out. Does anybody know what happened after that 22? Did they lose one and win a few more? I can't remember. I was so transfixed on that 23rd game that I can't remember what happened afterwards. I needed a break, I think, from the Indians after that record was break. But what a tremendous, tremendous feat in the game of baseball. And if you go to the top of the payroll, the Los Angeles Dodgers last year. Listen, this is engineered success. This organization's got it together. They're not afraid to spend money, but they're also really, really internally looking for ways to create a performance environment. I love these guys, and I'm going to watch them forever. I believe 12 years in a row in the postseason, and there's no sign of that slowing down at all. Last year, they had 43 wins over a 50-game stretch. And you have to go back to the 1912 New York Giants to find anything that comes close to that. Actually, it matches what the Giants did in 2018. Of course, also last season, Aaron Judge was the big story. Can he repeat this year? Oh, the Yankees. Aaron Judge, 52 home runs last year. The first rookie in Major League history to hit 50 home runs in a season. Just incredible. You know, the Yankees have backed him up and bolstered that lineup. There is no escaping Aaron Judge this year, because before and after him and every other slot, there's going to be somebody who can hit. The Yankees are going to be a force to be reckoned with. There's no doubt about it. And here's an interesting stat from last season. 59 complete games thrown. That's the fewest in Major League history. But we also had the most home runs ever in a season. 6,105 home runs, which beat the record set in 2000. We also had the highest number of strikeouts, over 40,000 strikeouts in 2017. So the game is changing, and those numbers are just proof of this. I mean, just look at that number, 59 complete games only last year. I think that's a real sign of how we're using our pitchers. We're using our bullpens. I mean, we've talked about this for years now. We're seeing pitching specialists, guys that come out and relieve the starters, middle setup guys, and you have your setup guy, then you have your closer. I think it's going to change some more. Now, the new rules are going to make it interesting, as they're limiting the number of visits to the mound. They're also limiting the warm-up procedures for new pitchers coming into the game. So we're going to see a lot of cool things in baseball this year that I think bode well for the future of the game. Even if you're a traditionalist, I don't think anybody wants to sit through four-hour games. The average game last year was 3 hours and 9 minutes, I believe, 3 hours and 8 minutes, just over 3 hours. It's too long. If we can keep it just under 3 hours, now we've got something special going on. And then when you do have that long extra inning game, let it ride, man. There's nothing like extra innings when it's a special event, right? And then, of course, there's one of our favorite baseball topics, injury prevention, in a game that has been just plagued with injuries. This is one of the top priorities for every single organization on the planet. You know, it's interesting to see the changes in the game. We've seen 4 teams now really dive into the sports science side of performance. And sort of starting with the Blue Jays. A couple years ago, they brought in a director of performance, not a baseball guy. One of the directors at the IMG Academy came in to turn things around, and they're still fine-tuning their program. But interesting, this last offseason, we see the Padres have hired the director of performance from the All Blacks in New Zealand to come in and see if they can turn that culture around. He was one of the pivotal keys in the All Blacks' success. There's no doubt about it. So we'll watch with interest to see if it can actually work inside the game of baseball, which is a totally different animal from rugby. Go a little further north, Seattle. The Mariners have hired the performance director from the LA Lakers. She has a great background in analytics. She's also an exercise physiologist. She's going to bring a very interesting twist to that organization. Will it make a difference? And then the Mets this offseason have also hired a director of performance. This is an interesting one because he has a strength background from college and went to the Army and actually initiated and was a big part of developing performance programs and collecting and putting an entire program together for the Army. He's now with the Mets to see if they can really turn their injury situation around because it crippled them last year. And trust me, it's crippling ownership and GMs and anybody who's trying to put together a roster. You have to be healthy and you have to have depth nowadays. There was a great study done. It was published in the American Journal of Orthotics in March of 2016. These are the most recent numbers in terms of injuries. But it looked at the seasons from 1998 to 2015. Get this, all right? The average annual cost paid to players who weren't playing the game, players on the DL, the disabled list, was just over $423 million a year over that period, 1998 to 2015. The total bill over that period, those 18 seasons for players that couldn't play, over $7.6 billion paid to players that couldn't play. Now, those are numbers that are going to raise some eyebrows. The good news here is those numbers raise awareness and effort and focus, and the number of shoulder injuries are actually down over that time, but UCL, Tommy John surgeries are up. Here's an interesting thing. If you go back to 1974 and look at all the Tommy John surgeries, the UCL, ulnar collateral ligament operations and reconstructions that have been done, nearly one third have happened in the last 5 years. This is a 42-year period that they looked at elbow injuries and surgeries and breakdowns in baseball. And one third of all of those reconstructions happened in the last 5 years, from 2011 to 2015. Well, what's going on? Listen, these numbers are incredibly important. These injuries are happening once a player gets to professional baseball, but they didn't develop there. They started long, long before these players signed their first pro contract. Trust me, these kids, these players were broken long before they ever came to professional ball. So we've got to now start rethinking our developmental system. And it's really important, especially for the developmental levels. Little league, high school, college, we really got to pay attention to these numbers. So why? Why would one third of all of the elbow injuries and reconstructions and surgeries in the last 42 years happen in the last 5 years? Could it have something to do with throwing velocity? Well, if we go back to 2008, that season in 2008, there were only 61 pitches thrown that entire year over 100 miles an hour by 8 pitchers. Fast forward 4 years to 2012, there were 397 pitches over 100 miles an hour by 15 pitchers. In 2016, the last data that we have, we don't have the data for 2017 yet, but for 2016, there were 1,379 pitches by 31 pitchers over 100 miles an hour. And not only that, we're seeing kids throwing harder earlier. Listen, there's a fine balance between intensity and volume, and it's something we've got to pay attention to. So we'll talk about that more later in the show, but we've got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, just how important is that player-coach relationship, and what can you do to bolster a powerful, meaningful relationship with your players? We talk with Jonathan Armold, pitching coach in the Texas Rangers organization, about organizational behavior right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kershaw, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with the performance plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crochelle here. We're your weekly source for performance information. The website, crushperformance.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. And today, we are talking baseball. Baseball is back, baby. Spring training is well underway. Minor league camps have reported, and it's an exciting time of year. But baseball is a very interesting game. If you play hockey or basketball or soccer, rugby, if you're a coach or a GM, you'll probably at some point want to look at the baseball world in terms of player development and strategies for player development. Baseball is just sort of evolving in terms of high-performance cultures and high-performance long-term athlete development. It's just starting. So we're at a very, very exciting time in the game. But all the organizations out there and all the different sports can look to baseball for probably a very unique approach to player development because they have their players for a long time. It's not come out of high school, sign and play Major League Baseball. It's not come out of college and go directly to Major League Baseball. It's sign your pro contract and get into a developmental system where hopefully you can become a Major League player and contribute to the highest level of the game. And that takes organizational responsibility. And there's nothing more powerful inside of an organization than the coach-athlete relationship. And we are joined right now by Jonathan Armold, pitching coach in the Texas Rangers organization, also has his master's in organizational behavior. Jonathan, I've been looking forward to this. Welcome to the show.
No doubt. Thanks for having me on.
Well, hey, you and I met late last year down at the ranch, the Texas Baseball Ranch at Ron Wolfer's great organization and facility down there. And I was really, really taken by your conversation and your presentation to all the coaches there. It was really great, a great take, I think, on helping people perform in general. Maybe to give our listeners a bit of background, you were, of course, a pro baseball player. You're now in the coaching ranks, and maybe just fill us in as to how your education fit into your playing and your coaching. Real busy time for you, and also congratulations, you're a new father as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I went to college at Flagler College in St. Augustine, Florida. Got drafted out of there in 2012 by the Milwaukee Brewers. Played for them for a couple of years, released, and kind of was unsure as I wanted to do. I'd always planned on, I'd never planned on being a coach and had planned on becoming an attorney, going to law school, and kind of felt this pull towards coaching, but still wanted to further my education at the same time. So started coaching at the University of Texas at Dallas before I wound up hooking on with the Rangers. And as I was doing that, started my master's degree, which I graduated shortly before we met at the ranch. So got my master's degree in organizational behavior, and it also came with a lot of things in professional and executive coaching, which initially I didn't think had any translation over to the realm of sport coaching and what I was doing on the field for baseball coaching, but came to find out about halfway through that master's degree, I think there's something here, and I think there's something that can be really applicable to what I am doing on sport coaching and what a lot of other coaches are doing on the field.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Jonathan, really interesting path you took. I'm actually was really intrigued by it, and your presentation was fantastic. I mean, with spring training getting underway, let's talk about, how incredible it is to succeed at a sport like baseball. I mean, we have so many great young players coming up now. We see these players on TV who are really, really exceptional at what they do. You've sort of tested those waters. You've been there. Man, those are some rough waters to tread, aren't they?
Definitely. I actually read an article. It's funny you say that. I read an article the other day. I can't remember who the player actually was or even what team it was for, but it was kind of writing about a player that would be considered completely sub-replacement level. And this article was basically written entirely about him, but more so about the average sport fan or average fan in general has no idea really how competitive and difficult things are at the major league level, and it really all trickles down from there. So absolutely, you got to find ways to separate yourself, especially when you're dealing with the caliber of athletes that you get into in professional sport.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm really actually very impressed with the path that you took getting into organizational behavior. I know your first sort of thoughts were to go into law, which is a commendable thing. Having that education backup
as an athlete, Jonathan. Maybe we could start there. How important is that? I mean, I see so many guys that may wind up being too one-sided for their own good, you know, going too far into baseball where that's the end-all, be-all. You obviously had options. And how important is that in the overall big picture?
I think it's really important. You know, I feel for a lot of athletes because, you know, I won't shy away from it. Like, minor league pay is not very good unless you end up getting, you know, a big signing bonus and you're kind of taken care of in that sense. You know, it's a hard, it's a difficult life. It's, you know, you're dealing with roommates. You've got an off season where you're not getting paid. So being able to have options, having a college degree, I think that's a major thing where sometimes kids get drafted out of high school and they don't take advantage of the ability to get that degree paid for. I think it's just really important. Sport isn't always forever, and you have to have options that beyond that to support yourself, support your family, and everything else that comes with that.
Yeah, we've seen many athletes in a multitude of sports just free themselves from a lot of stress just by having that backup plan, and we've actually seen that transition pole vault them to success in their sport as well. So there's a lot of benefits from being a well-rounded human outside of just being a well-rounded athlete.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. We're talking with Jonathan Arnold. He's a pitching coach with the Texas Rangers organization. Also has a very interesting educational background that I feel is going to be, Jonathan, one of the difference makers in your future career here as you are now coaching with the Texas Rangers, getting a master's degree in organizational behavior. Let's just sort of set that up for our listeners and what that encompasses, because I think that the applications here go well beyond sport, but certainly can be focused into human performance inside of a sport like baseball.
Sure. So, you know, mainly just organizational behavior, understanding how organizations work, how great organizations work, how to make them and work better through organizations, leadership, all those sorts of things that absolutely extend beyond sport. And even within sport, you know, I think that's a major theme that we're starting to see. I'm starting to see a lot of coaches actually talk about relationships and more. You're seeing college coaches that are really standing out from the herd, because they're really pointing to the relationships that they create with players. I think there's kind of a fallacy within coaching that, oh, you know, coaches have to understand people and have to understand or inherently understand people and communication. And realistically, it's just like anything else, you know, pitching mechanics. As soon as I got done playing, it's not like I perfectly understood them. Like, I had to study them and look at them and learn about them. And I think the same thing goes for communication and leadership and creating a culture. And how can you create, you know, better coaching relationships or player-coach relationships through that? And how sometimes you have to work on skills like that. It's a skill just like anything else.
Yeah, most certainly. One of the things you mentioned in our conversations down in Texas was this idea of sort of like the next frontier for sport performance development, but really, really important topics like, you know, understanding human behavior and improving learning outcomes. I mean, we certainly can see the benefits of that in an academic setting. There's no doubt as you know, incorporate new employees into an organization, that's important. But in terms of sports, sometimes I feel this is really, really overlooked, especially when you get to the higher levels. Everybody assumes these players know what they're doing. So sometimes it's really difficult. Well, I won't say difficult, but maybe we shy away from coaching the higher end players the way we perhaps should in terms of our, you know, really understanding of how humans develop. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think it's really important to understand that not all people are alike, just like how we're starting to understand that, okay, no two mechanics are alike because no two bodies are alike. Mechanics change based on the physiology, and then going from there, it's the same thing with human behavior. It's the same thing with communication. I might talk on this podcast completely different than I go on another podcast because I'm trying to reach my audience the best. And you can think about that very similarly with your athletes or with sport athletes in general of, okay, how can I reach player X better than I can reach player Y? Or how can I reach player X differently, more so than better? Because all personalities are different. It might be better if I'm fired up when I talk to player X, but I've got to talk to player Y from more of a calm, rational sort of state of being. And looking at things like that, I think is really important. We can get lost in talking about mechanics and talking about training programs and overloads and things like that. And I just think shining a little bit more light on the learning outcomes, because ultimately it's not about us. If it's not about us and it's about them, the athlete, then how can we facilitate that more?
We're talking with Jonathan Arnold, pitching coach for the Texas Rangers, recent graduate with his master's degree in organizational behavior. And Jonathan, you know, for our audience, for the parents and coaches, and even the athletes that are listening today, I think one of the interesting things that you and I discussed when we were down in Texas was those four core competencies of professional and executive coaches. I mean, these are sort of the cornerstones of creating that learning relationship and that learning environment. Maybe we could just touch on these a little bit, because I think sometimes these are some of the most important things that we overlook, I think.
Sure. So those four core competencies were for the professional and executive coaching. So really came through my master's degree, and I started to try to apply them a little bit more directly to sport coaching, where, you know, we don't really think of it in that sense. The very first core competency was setting the foundation, which was meeting ethical guidelines and standards. So basically, you have to have a certain moral compass, I guess you could say, with your athlete, or there's not going to be any kind of a relationship. There's not going to be any kind of trust there. You start to realize, and what I realized through this master's program, is how important trust is in organizational behavior, specifically in professional executive coaching, but even more so through kind of my thesis project, how important trust really is to athletes in terms of their coach, and do they trust their coach or do they not trust their coach. So that first one was setting the foundation, really establishing a good foundation with your athlete. The second one was co-creating the relationship, which is, you know, it's not just coming from this dictatorship style of coaching anymore. You're beginning to establish trust and intimacy with your athletes. It's really important for open and honest communication, which is the third one, the third core competency of communicating effectively, where you have a strong coaching presence. But coaching presence isn't just me being domineering. It's more me being able to be comfortable and confident in who I am, but also allowing the athlete to take ownership and to be empowered and to be engaged in what they're doing. And through that, you have to be able to actively listen and ask good questions and just communicate well. And then finally, which is ultimately the thing that I think as sport coaches we jump to the fastest, but it's the fourth core competency for a reason, is facilitating learning and results. And those learning and results really don't happen without the first three core competencies being taken care of, for the most part.
Yeah, and I agree with you so much. I think we see this all the time. With the greatest of intentions, we want to jump right to the chase and start making things happen. And I think, sort of taking the time to create that environment is very, very, very important. And it's not that hard to do. Even if you're coaching little duffers right up to college programs and even in the professional ranks, that relationship you create with your group and then the individual players is so important prior to even really worrying about outcomes, right?
Definitely. There's a ton of research that's going on now. And, you know, I had my very first kind of research article published that was talking about it. It's essentially this entire master's program that I spent a year or so working on, talking about the incorporating this professional executive coaching into sport coaching. But there's so much more research that's going out there now that about the importance of the relationship and how the relationship can impact on-field performance. And that's something that's hard to quantify, but just like anything else, I perform a lot better when I'm happier at work. And that's basically what you start to realize with athletes, is they're the exact same way. They're going to perform a lot better when they're happier in a happier environment. They have a better relationship with their coach.
Yeah, and that happy environment is probably usually a positive environment. I like what you said about the athletes having some input as to what's going on. That is critically important nowadays for sure. So there's lots of very interesting and easy strategies a coach at any level can use to create that positive environment to make sure, one, the athletes are having fun. Listen, Jonathan, we did a show here recently talking about, you know, why kids play sport. We're going to revisit it again because there's some new intriguing research that's coming out. But we know for a fact, based on all the research that's been done from the grassroots right up to the professional levels, the reason people play is to have fun. And the number one reason kids are dropping out of sport, especially through that critical time, 12, 11, 13 years of age, where, you know, things are changing, relationships are changing, bodies are changing, a lot of things are going on. Kids are dropping out at skyrocketing rates. And the number one reason is they're not having fun anymore. So those are some simple things you can do to create that environment where, you know, the athlete does enjoy it. And it's not that hard to do.
Definitely. And if you let the athlete, more often than not, if you let that athlete lead the process, you're not going to run into that problem. But just like anybody else, you know, I'm obsessive compulsive about certain things. But one thing and one area that this has all really taught me to give up control is in my sport coaching. And specifically, you know, it's my job more than anything to set up the environment and allow them to learn from there. But I'm not dictating, and I'm not really specifically directing them. I'm trying to help them to find their way more often than not. And that's going to be a much more fun environment than the coach that's jumping down every athlete's throat.
Yeah. We're talking with Jonathan Armold, pitching coach in the Texas Rangers organization. Great conversation here today, Jonathan. I think one of the things that you mentioned is all powerful, and it comes back to, you know, getting the athletes involved in the process, and that's just by simply asking some good key questions. I mean, that's just a simple, powerful tool that every coach can utilize.
Definitely. So the big tool for that is, instead of, okay, we're throwing a bullpen and you do something, instead of me just saying, oh, there it was, you did this, instead I can ask you the question in order to create some more self-awareness for you and to allow you to realize for yourself, because it's not about me, it's about you, to allow you to realize for yourself, oh, I did this, or, oh, I felt this, and that was a good rep. So that then when you go and you end up having a bad rep, you know, you remember because you absorbed it, because you were empowered and you were engaged yourself rather than a coach just telling you, you can get yourself back to that good rep from the bad rep. So a couple tools within that is in professional executive coaching, they try to help you guide you with what types of questions to ask. So in that, you can ask any question that doesn't begin with a why, meaning you can ask why did you do that? And a lot of that is about the relationship that we talked about earlier, where you're trying to facilitate an adult-to-adult relationship as opposed to something that's parent-child or child-to-child. So in that, you know, the first people that asked you the why questions of why did you do that were your parents. So if we're trying to stay out of that relationship, you want to try to stay away from those why questions, because it affects your tone. It also affects the perception by the athlete. So that's just a really simple, small tool that took me some time to kind of implement, even admittedly in my own sport coaching. But trying to eliminate the why questions and just rephrasing it. And realistically, that's communication. I can say things with a certain tone that get completely analyzed and taken a different way if I say them with a different tone. Same thing with words. If you take that why question out, and instead of why did you do that, you know, what was the purpose of you doing that, is an entirely different question in and of itself.
Yeah, no, I really like that. And that's a powerful, powerful shift, and something that I think we all just, you're right, need to practice and be aware of. We're talking with Jonathan Armold, pitching coach with the Texas Rangers. Jonathan, you had a very interesting path to where you're at right now. I really like the idea that you came through as a player. You coach at the college level. You're now at the professional level. You've backed yourself up with this incredible education. In the professional game, what has been your impression so far as a coach? You come as a player, you've seen it from that side of the game. A real great opportunity now to come in with this type of a mindset and background and education and I guess philosophy on the coaching side. I think it's going to be all powerful for you. So in your first couple of years as a pitching coach in professional ball, how's it been so far, and what do you see moving forward?
It's been really good so far. What I've come to realize is, you know, the organization that you're with means a lot. And I've got the pleasure of working underneath an outstanding pitching coordinator that uses a ton of these tools. And whether he realizes it or not doesn't really matter. It's the fact that he utilizes a lot of these tools to get the most out of his pitching coaches. And I think that's unbelievably powerful, especially when you sit back and you reflect on, okay, you know, I'm liking where I'm at in this position. How can I do that for my athletes in the same way? And, you know, I'll be honest, coming in to professional baseball, I never really planned on being a professional pitching coach. I was planning on being a college pitching coach and thought that that was the best path for me. And this kind of jumped into my lap, and I took it on wholeheartedly, and I've really enjoyed it ever since. And it has its differences from, you know, when I was originally a college pitching coach, where I was basically my own boss, ran the show, where, okay, now I've got a boss. I've got a pitching coordinator that I respect. He respects me. So we've got an outstanding working relationship, and there's no issues there, thankfully. So that's been one big standout.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, Jonathan, hey, really appreciate this conversation today. This is going to set the tone, I have a good feeling, for many conversations moving forward. I know spring training's right around the corner for you guys. So all the best of luck to you guys over spring training and into the season. And we'll look forward to touching base on this, you know, this kind of topic. I mean, it's just so powerful. So really appreciate it today.
Definitely appreciate it, Crush. Thanks for having me on.
And there you have it, everybody. Fantastic conversation right there. I think we're seeing more and more of this across the sporting landscape. And the parallels, again, between business, academics, sport, it doesn't matter. Anywhere there's human performance, that relationship, teacher, coach, mentor, employee, boss relationship is so, so important. Organizational behavior is slowly creeping its way into the baseball world. And I think, you know, every other sporting organization out there probably could benefit from some kind of strategic plan when it comes to building those internal relationships for sure. Hey, we got to cut up for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. We'll talk a bit about my new book. I want to thank everybody for the great feedback so far, but I also want to talk about injuries and the balance between intensity and volume right after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penn. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Today, we are talking baseball. Spring training, of course, well underway. Minor league camps have officially opened, and it is just a great time of year. A lot of stress down south, don't get me wrong. Arizona and in Florida, not only at the free agent camp, the 31st spring training camp in Major League Baseball, which is incredibly bizarre. Like, I mean, just think about what we're saying here. You could take those free agents, the free agents that haven't signed this year, and you could go back to Montreal and field an incredibly competitive big league team. How about that? So the talent pool might be there for the expansion that the commissioner is talking about, going into Montreal, potentially back to Canada and down into Mexico. One of the big questions was, is there the talent pool? Well, I think it's quite obvious the talent pool is there. So let's do it. Two more major league teams. How fantastic would that be? Time will tell. But down south, tensions are high. Spring training is a stressful time, especially if you're sort of on the bubble or looking to move up the ladder in your organization or trying to get that first big league contract. And one of the biggest factors here for all of the athletes who are competing and developing and training down south right now is staying healthy.
You have to figure out a way to stay healthy. Unfortunately, the overall injury rates in baseball are on the rise. And it could be to a number of different contributing factors. Most certainly, pitching and the way we're using our pitchers. Now, let's be clear. I truly believe that the injuries we're seeing in professional ball, which is where all the data is coming from, most of these injuries are well on their way before these players sign their pro contracts. The majority of the damage that's being done is happening in the developmental levels of baseball. Little league baseball, right up through high school baseball, college baseball. These injuries don't just happen. They graduate and develop over time, especially when we look at the throwing motion. Now, the good news is shoulder injuries are down. The bad news is elbow injuries are on the rise. In 2016, as an example, baseball teams lost an average of 961 man games due to injuries. Now, this is everything from obliques to hamstrings to Achilles to certainly shoulders and elbows for sure. And it cost teams last year on average $26 million per team, paying salaries to players who didn't play the game. For the total season, about $780,000 last year went to players who couldn't play the game. And it's a big concern for baseball. And not just because of the money. Don't get me wrong. This is just an indicator that we're using to sort of figure out what the trends are. But we want players to be healthy. We want them to be healthy and happy, not just to play the game, but for life in general. And there's a couple factors that contribute here. And I believe that we really do need to keep focusing on that pitch count. But there's another all-important factor, okay? The pitch counts are looking at volume of throwing depending on the age of the player. So as your player gets older, the number of pitches per unit time can go up. That's only a small part of the story. And here's some data that you might appreciate that can sort of maybe help paint the picture. There's a study done a few years ago looking at all of the UCL injuries, the Tommy John surgeries, the elbow injuries in baseball. And this study sort of discovered that 92 miles an hour was a tipping point. And they found that for every mile an hour that you throw over 92, the risk of elbow injury, and I'm talking surgery, increases by 15%. And for a 5 mile an hour increase, so if you're throwing over 97 miles an hour, it's a 98% increase in the odds of ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction. And that's a study that came out in 2016. Basically, what they're saying is if you're throwing over 92 miles an hour, proceed with caution. It's not that you can't throw over 92 miles an hour. I have a funny feeling it's how much you throw over 92 miles an hour. So not only do we need to look at pitch counts for our young developing players, we need to look at the intensity in which they're throwing. If you have a young 13-year-old, let's say the average throwing velocity for a pitcher who is 13 years old is 60 miles an hour. Let's just say that, 60 miles an hour, all right? If you have a 13-year-old that throws 76 miles an hour, okay, we need to make sure they throw less than the players who are closer to the average. Does that make sense? So for all you parents, coaches, and players out there, remember, volume and intensity. Athletes love running fast and they love throwing hard, so proceed with caution. And that about does it for this week's show. I want to thank Jonathan Armold for joining us. Great conversation on organizational behavior and really, really focusing on that coach-player relationship. And listen, I have to thank everybody who's given us feedback on our new book, The Performance Plan. It's on Amazon right now. There will be a paperback and an audiobook coming this March, so stay tuned for that. But I want to thank everybody for all the support there. Listen, it's a short, quick read, but we just wanted to give you an idea of things you need to be thinking about if you're planning to attack a goal or just improve your performance. You have to set it up right, and that's what the book's all about. So go check that out. I'd love to hear from you. That'll do it for today, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
Here is Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera with an Inside the Dugout Quick Fix.
There is something coming up, but it's looming. It's ugly, Kevin, in our game. And that's the labor and rest that is going to come to a crescendo in the next week or so. There was an email that went out, or a post that went out from Brody Van Wagner. The shot across the bow there was 1994 for me, Kevin.
That was hell. I mean, that was awful. For me personally, it was really bad because I hadn't managed that long in the big leagues, only 1 year. That was my second year. And I personally had worked a lot of years to try to finally get there. 16 years in the minor leagues, combination of instructor and player to finally get to the big leagues. It took me 16 years. when the strike hit, we were in first place, even though our record wasn't great. It was ugly. It was just a bad feeling all year long. You know what I mean? It was not fun to go to the ballpark. And you would think after all those years getting to the big leagues that it would be the best time of your life. It was not. As a baseball player and as a baseball manager, it was an ugly, ugly time. And I hope that never happens again.
Inside the Dugout with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.